I'm Ava Hartling. Welcome back to the Brand is Female podcast.
This week, as we wrap up International Women's Month, I have the honor of introducing a very special guest. Isabelle Hudon has consistently shattered expectations and proven skeptics wrong throughout her impressive career in the corporate world. As a president and CEO of BDC since August 2021, the first woman to occupy the role, Isabelle has not only held jobs that many doubted were within reach, but has also excelled in them, leaving a trail of achievements from her time as Ambassador of Canada to France to her leadership roles at Sun Life Financial. Isabelle's tenure at BDC is marked by her relentless drive to put development at the forefront, significantly enhancing support for Canadian entrepreneurs with a focus on increasing capital available to female founders. Beyond her executive success, she's a staunch advocate for women's advancement, co-founding the A Effect and earning accolades such as the Commander of the Legion of Honor for her contributions. In this episode, Isabelle generously shares her experiences of overcoming doubt, her strategic vision for creating a more inclusive and sustainable economy, and her dedication to paving the way for the next generation of women leaders. Keep listening to explore the journey of a leader who turns skepticism into true power. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. Isabelle, it's an absolute pleasure having you on The Brand is Female today. Thank you so much for making time.
My pleasure, Eva, and welcome back to BDC.
Thank you. We were just talking about the fact that I worked at BDC over 20 years ago at the start of my career, so it's nice to be in the offices again.
Does it feel like 20 years ago here?
I mean, it's the same building. I definitely recognize the vibe. The decoration's been updated a little bit, which is nice. But it's still, I recognize the place.
Yeah,
and
the
it's
vibe,
good memories.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yes. But it's nice having a woman in charge now. So I'm very excited for our conversation today.
Another first, Eva.
I know. And there's many to your list. So we're going to go through them. We love first where women are concerned.
It's still shocking, but very much surprising that still in 2023, 2024, we feel the importance, and rightly so, to mention this. But there are so many still first that we need to see.
Absolutely.
I was a little bit surprised when I was 30 something and I was appointed at the Montreal Board of Trade, the first woman. I was young. It was my first number one position. Then even at the time, Eva, I was surprised on the reaction that, oh my God, you're the first woman in the job. And it lasted for up to 18 months, that reaction. And that was early 2000? Yeah.
Right.
Almost, you're saying, yeah. It's been so long, but still. It's a reflection that should make us pause a little bit and reflect.
I see what you mean. Are you getting used to now being considered the first in doing something? You're also the first female president at BDC. Are you tired of hearing that?
No, I'm not tired. Though I do believe that it comes with additional responsibilities and duties when you're the first. You need to keep on being a trailblazer. You need to open the road for the other ones. And you need to use your voice as one of the model. I don't pretend that I'm the model for female leadership. But still, women are pretty good at replicating what we see. We're not very good and comfortable at being a trailblazer.
Right.
So more of us out there, visible and vocal, will help younger women to believe that it is really for themselves also. Without seeing, I think that we don't believe.
Absolutely. This is exactly why I created The Brand is Female, because we needed more visibility for role models. And I remember at the start of my career, there weren't that many women in senior positions that I could look up to in the business world. There were some, but they weren't getting that much visibility. We never heard from them.
For different reasons, Eva, you would remember so few that they kind of did not want it to be visible, because
right.
when you are one of the very few, you're even more visible.
Yeah.
I do remember in 20 or 25 years ago in my first role, the number of invitation that I received to tone down my female attributes. That sounds wrong here, but you know, like emotional, caring, dressing differently, you know, like all those things that are different, not better or reverse than men, but different.
Yeah.
Like the number of people that invited me quietly or not so quietly to tone down those attributes, I think that many, many women before us accepted the invitation to tone down. And even today, so they became just less visible because they kind of melted among everyone else, and everyone else was men or were men.
It's interesting. Adam Grant, I don't know if you follow him, he wrote about that recently. He talked about how women adapted to the language of men. So women can speak the language of men, and we've used it to our benefit to a certain extent, because we had to play by the rules if we wanted to be in the game, right? So this is similar to what you're talking
about. I've never accepted to play by any rules other than discipline and like accepting that there's rules that in life you need to respect. But playing by rules, I've never accepted this.
Good for you. And we're grateful you didn't. Because now you're the role model we're inspired by.
Well, I don't know if I'm a role model. I do accept and recognize that I'm one model among others. And I'm one very vocal and loud model.
Yeah.
Because I do recognize that I need to use my voice as a public figure. It's a privilege. And we can accelerate things as being not only vocal, but public.
Right.
So.
And when those people were asking you to tone down, what did you tell them? Or what did you, I know you didn't do it, but did you address their concerns?
No. I either smiled or
turned around
and moved on. I think that the look on my face was enough for them not to ask twice. And my parents would advise them not to go on that path, but they did. The trick, though, Eva, is to find the right tone and manner to say no.
Right.
And also to find the right tone and manner to raise issues that are not acceptable anymore. I think that everyone is capable, almost everyone is capable of almost hearing everything. But the key is to find the right tone and manner.
Right.
For example, often I will say, whenever I have to raise something that feels totally reverse of equality. You know, you enter into a room, and I did this when I was leading at Sun Life. I remember one day I walked into the conference room. Consultants were waiting for me for a pitch on their services. And I was late to the meeting, and I walked into the conference room, and I looked at everyone in the room, Eva, and it was only men. And I remember pausing, and it was too big not to say anything. And I remember pausing, bringing my voice a little bit down and speaking a little bit slower than usual. And I said, I do feel that there's something wrong in this room. And they all looked at themselves, and they were like a bunch of men, you know, full of confidence and energy.
About?
And they said, well, what's wrong? And I said, well, doesn't look like reality. And and I invited them to go back to their office and come back with a more diverse crowd.
Good for you.
And I remember they left my office They were not impressed.
Mm.
But they came back a few weeks after. The first thing they said is, thank you, Isabel. Because we left your office, we were not impressed. But it made us think about, what could we do differently?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they came back. You see, if walking into the room, I would have used like my high-pitched voice and very quick, very fast, they would have said like, oh, she's everything but calm and a good leader.
Mm-hmm.
But I've tried to suggest to them that I was pausing and reflecting and that it felt just a little bit wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I let them finish the reflection and make the reflection theirs. So the tone and manner is quite important on raising those inequalities.
I think that's,
inequalities.
It's very interesting because now we're talking about the benefits of soft leadership a lot more and things that were traditionally perceived as a very feminine type of leadership, like empathy, like caring, listening, you know, almost one of my guests once referred to, she brings her mom skills to her work as a, you know, as a leader. Are you seeing that we're kind of fixing something, you know, something that was wrong in the past and that we are welcoming more of that type of leadership, which, by the way, doesn't just apply to women. It's something that men should be bringing to work as well.
The short answer is yes, Eva. The longer version is starting by yes, but I see more and more leaders caring with a great load of empathy, the emotional intelligence, and those leaders are not only women.
Right.
So when you do lead different generations on your team, it's impossible not to be forced to go into that space.
Right.
The younger generations, they will not settle for less than their leader being empathic, being caring, listening in a very careful way.
Mm-hmm.
So forget men and or women,
right.
But if you want to be a successful leader, it's impossible not to develop those skills.
Right.
And I do believe that that's why we see more and more women into leadership roles.
Yeah.
Because companies and organizations, they want to keep their employees.
Yeah.
They want to attract more employees. So they want to make sure that those attributes are being deployed across the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very difficult to force this on any leaders when at the top, it's not being deployed.
Absolutely.
I don't think that it's natural for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't see your leader, the most senior leader, deploying those attributes, I don't think that it's that easy and natural for everyone to embark into that journey.
Right.
But if you don't, you're not going to be successful at running your business because you will not be able to retain the talent.
Yeah. I want to take you back a little bit. And you've talked about, you know, all those firsts and you were always, you had kind of that drive, that ambition, that vision. Did you know that at an early age when you were growing up? What were you thinking of dreaming of doing as a career later in life?
I kind of knew at the time, but not exactly, Eva. First of all, I was born and raised in a small village. At the time, when not knowing more or anything different than where I was born, I thought that I was in a big city, but then came to realize that this big city was shrinking and shrinking, and honestly, I was born and raised in a village.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that I was often bored.
Yeah.
nothing was fast enough for me. There was not enough people around me. But at the same time, I was shy. I was not so tall, not that I'm tall today, but I was very short. I was kind of fat. And I was born and raised in a very conventional family with my dad, my mom, but very much traditional, where my brother was, and still older than I, had a different recognition.
Mm, right.
And I do think that it starts from there. One of my good friends is Lise Wattier, and often she says that I will prove them wrong. That's what the one-liner mm-hmm. that stayed with her along her professional journey. And I think that I was driven by this, like, I'll prove him wrong, him being my brother.
Your brother.
And I'll prove them wrong, them being my parents. And that's probably where I took and fed my rebellion mm-hmm. a little bit. Mm-hmm. I felt a little bit of injustice between my brother and myself.
Yeah, it wasn't fair that he was getting more opportunities or a special treatment as a man.
Exactly. So that's probably when it all started. But I was bored and shy.
Interesting.
And it's all the reverse now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm everything except bored, and I'm not shy.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear you were shy.
Though, when I do like psychologic tests, mm-hmm. and I did like a few sets of those because I've changed often jobs, yeah. and when you do change not only jobs but organization, often they'll put you through all those testing. Mm-hmm. And for people that know me or know me very well, it's always a surprise. I test as an introvert.
Wow. Okay.
But I kind of knew when I was very young that being shy and introvert would not allow me to be totally happy.
Mm.
Knowing that it could probably stop me of doing things or being afraid. And mm-hmm. so I had to work on myself to move from being shy to a little bit comfortable. And mm-hmm. probably I moved from the other extreme. You know, I became very expressive.
Yeah.
So much so that my parents would tell you that it was just a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm. They were saying the same thing as you got told later in your career. Tone it down.
Tone it down. But that's probably my personal reaction of me adapting to the life that I wanted. Mm-hmm. I kind of knew very young that if I was to stay as is, I would never be fully equipped.
Mm-hmm.
to make for myself a life that I was dreaming about. So the shy person and the bored person had to disappear at one point.
So. Right.
So what do you do not to be bored? Well, you stretch yourself.
Right.
What do you do not to be shy?
Yeah, that's my big question.
Well, you feed your confidence. Okay. And you go at the extreme and you test your own limits.
Mm.
And it takes once, twice, and then you get into the habit of...
Yeah, it's a muscle.
Exactly. Mm. It's like a muscle.
Mm. So what was the big, kind of, the biggest jump you felt you took in leaping into that confidence and that confident self? Mm. Was it your first big job? Was it... And something that's been discussed too, I remember, because I remember reading about you when you were at the Chamber of Commerce and then, you know, all the other firsts afterwards. And something that would be brought up is she doesn't even have a business degree. She doesn't, you know, and she's the first woman to do that. Exactly.
But that's true. And that's probably one, I don't know if everyone would say that it was courageous, but how I did it was courageous,
mm-hmm.
not to stay in school.
Right.
Not that I celebrate not going into school.
Yeah.
And I'm very mindful and careful on how I tell this story. And mm-hmm. I was even more before, because we wanted Jill and I, we have four kids mm-hmm. together, and we wanted to make sure that all our kids would get a university diploma. So
right.
I had to be careful on how I was telling yeah. the story, but I've never lied about this reality. I decided not to stay in school after Cégep, and it was a tough decision. Well, it was a natural decision for me, but it was it took me a lot of courage to bring this decision to my parents that mm-hmm. are both teachers.
Right.
And then my parents said, well, fine, it's your decision, but you're now on your own.
Yeah.
So I was 18 and needed to find a job. Well, probably I was more 19 or 20, but find a job and move on. And it was a very both courageous but risky decision.
Absolutely.
Because at age so young, when you don't have what university gives you, mm-hmm. it's a little bit risky on which decision and what kind of decision you take. Mm-hmm. Was I lucky? I think that there's a... I was born under a great star.
Yeah.
I don't call it necessarily luck, but still, I was well surrounded. Mm-hmm. I had good friends, and my parents were there. I think that as much as I quoted Lise Wattier, I'll prove them wrong, I had to prove myself that I was right. Mm-hmm. So I try to take the best decisions after that very difficult decision not to stay in school.
Right.
And I have no regrets. Mm-hmm. But it was my first 10 years were a bumpy road to success, mm-hmm. I have to say. Because when you don't have that diploma on mm-hmm. the wall, you fight over what you don't have.
Right.
Instead of showing up what you do have. Mm. But you don't know what you have
right.
in your early 20s. Well, you think you know, yeah. but it's not really necessarily know. The reality. So it was a bumpy road. I had many invitations to take the wrong exit on the highway that mm-hmm. I did not. Well, mm. I did not take only good decisions, but I grew through this process. Mm-hmm. I learned. I watched leaders that inspired me. I my first job was on the Hill in Ottawa in yeah. politics. Mm-hmm. And I watched very closely, very well-known and senior leaders on what they did that felt nice to me and the reverse. Mm-hmm. Often, Eva, mm-hmm. someone will ask me, like, who do you admire? And I never had, like, on my walls, like, posters of artists or, you know, yeah. like... So it's a very difficult question for me to answer, but I got this question so often that my answer is I try not to replicate what bugs me from others.
Okay. So you're kind of inspired...
Comme le contre-exemple.
Right, exactly. You see what you don't like.
I became very good at... When I'm in a situation that I'm not comfortable and I don't like the treatment I receive from others, I try not to point fingers at anyone, but try to understand what's bugging me so that I don't do this to yeah. others.
Yeah,
I think this is very, that is a female reaction.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Not to say that yeah. men are not doing this, but I think that we're more sensitive
yeah.
to this.
Yeah, I think we are. Are you ready to be inspired and connected? I'm really excited to share that we have officially launched the Brand is Female Conversation Series. Come and join us for a monthly conference that's changing the game in Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto. Engage with fellow women thought leaders, innovators, and visionaries. Get ready for insightful discussions and powerful networking opportunities presented by TD Women in Enterprise. Don't miss out on this opportunity to elevate your career and your network. Visit our website, go to the events section, and secure your spot today. I can't wait to meet you in person. It's interesting that I just had a discussion recently with someone on a podcast, and she talked about how she doesn't believe in a concept or role models, or they don't really work for her because she's more captured by ideas mm-hmm. than by, you know, actual somebody doing something. But what's interesting in your case is that you obtained, you know, you got to these positions. It wasn't just being born under, you know, a good star. It was also hard work and your, you know, the persona you built and the experience you had. And
hard work.
I can see that. I believe it.
I did not steal anything from anyone.
Yeah.
And it's not that I was born in a family where everything was ready for me to yeah. take over.
Yeah.
Work hard. And not true that everything I tried, I succeeded at.
Hmm. How did you know what to go after? Was it very intentional in saying, you know I want to lead the Montreal Chamber of Commerce, I know I want to be. Were you intentional in planning, you know, what your career steps were going to be? Or was it more of an intuitive process, or, you know, listening to what was coming up for you?
I'm not a good planner, so I've
okay.
I've never planned anything, and I never do lists. And so, though I had intentions, and I became very much intentional. Mm-hmm. I often say, and especially in that you would know, and you would agree, in business, not enough to have good intentions.
Absolutely.
You have to be intentional.
Yeah.
You have to take decisions mm-hmm. that are aligned to your attention.
Yeah, yes, ideally.
I think that's what drove me, Eva. I can tell you that the job at the Board of Trade, I raised my hand. I was number two at the time, and I said, I want the number one role. Mm. And I know it's for me, and I was only 34. I remember walking into the boardroom with the executive committee being there, only men. And I said, I want the job. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm capable of doing this job. I know that I'm not fully ready for the job, mm-hmm. but I know I can make it. I'll need you. I'll need to be surrounded by very strong people. But I'm ready for the job, and I'm asking you not to open the role, but to give it to me. I remember I did this, Eva.
Good for you.
I walked out of the boardroom, and I remember the big door closing on me. You know, like the noise felt even like louder than it was. And I remember pausing and say, oh, my God, what did I do? Mm-hmm. And I remember answering to myself, I did what I thought was right.
Absolutely.
And the real story is that probably they came back to me into a few days, but it felt like weeks and weeks before they came back to me. And they said, okay, Isabelle, we'll go for it.
Okay.
But A, B, C, you know, they gave me conditions
right.
and...
Yeah, and they usually do where women are concerned, right?
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. So, so I embarked into the role, and me getting to that role and doing the job, and I was growing into the role, but I was also doing a great job. We were doing a great job, the team. It convinced me that even if there's 30% missing in what you need mm-hmm. to really go for it.
Yeah.
It's very much possible. So then it drove me to go for bigger and
yeah.
bigger and bigger. I think that the biggest step I took was Sun Life.
Okay.
After the Board of Trade.
Yeah.
You've mentioned that I, at the time, did not have a university degree, never worked into the financial sector, mm-hmm. Never led big team, never worked into a global corporation. Like, there was a long list of never, 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 but that's not what I focused on. Mm-hmm. I was more focused on what I was bringing to
yeah.
the corporation that they did not have.
Yeah.
And this is like a piece of advice that I often serve to women. Stop looking at what you don't have and what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on what you bring to the table.
Absolutely.
And I remember that first morning when I walked into the Sun Life building, I was like full of confidence, Eva. I knew that was my place to be there. But my first few days were tough because mm. there was a lot of skepticism mm. around me being Isabelle, being a president of a financial institution. Mm. And some people laughed. Some people got very amused by this, and others were like, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I focused on that crowd that believed into this and did not get too much disrupted by the detractors.
Mm-hmm.
And then while the detractors realized just too late that it was serious business, and we brought back Sun Life on the growth path, and it made me very proud. But when I left Sun Life to move to Paris as ambassador, not often that I look back, Eva, but I did at that moment. And I told myself, oh my God, I left a lot into that job. Not that I, with any regret, but right. it took me a lot. Like the learning curve was so steep. And I knew when I was into the curve, but I'm now able to say that it was even steeper than what I felt.
Interesting. And when you deal with those people, and I don't know if they were saying it to your face, but when, you know, there's skeptics around the table or somebody challenging, does she, you know, do you have what it takes? And obviously leadership thought you did, the board thought you did, or you wouldn't have had the job. But have you ever found yourself in that situation where you have to tell someone, you know, put them back in their place? And I ask because I think for a lot of women who find themselves, and women listening to us, who find themselves in boardrooms, in, you know, meeting rooms, and they're being challenged around their expertise or their qualifications, how do you deal with that when somebody, you know, challenges you to your face?
So the short answer is, very often I was exposed to this. And I can tell you, and I can tell your audience, that the worst are the situations when they do it quietly. Like, bring it on with words.
Right.
And I will debate on what I know, what I don't know. What's worse is the passive-aggressive posture of someone make you feel very small.
Right.
And then you have to find the energy into yourself not to listen and not to get impacted by this posture of others. You have to make sure that your list of supporters is longer than your list of detractors.
Right. Okay. So that's behind the scenes work.
Yeah. That you need to manage very carefully.
Right.
On Monday mornings, you know, whenever you hear something not so good on you, you kind of smile. On Wednesday, you say, again. On Fridays, it's like, really? And then you go back home and you're tired. But it never made me think that I was not good. Was right. I tired of this at one point? Yes. Was I mad at some people? Yes, but I have very few good friends, but those good friends are always there. Mm-hmm. And when there's too much, well, I share with those friends. And I don't know if it's a good thing or the reverse, but everything being said on me, I know. And it's better to know than not knowing. It can be... It can hurt tough. Yourself. Yeah. It can be difficult.
Yeah.
But it's better to know what people are saying on you than not knowing.
At least you have the information. And like, you can act accordingly.
I know everything. And usually within an hour of something said on me, I know.
I have so many more questions on that. But I want to... That's a conversation we'll have when the mic is off. BDC, you came on first woman president.
Again.
exactly, another first on the list. Right. Now you've had experience running a financial institution, so they can't challenge you on that. And you came in with a very clear mandate around an increase in support, not just to entrepreneurs in general, but women entrepreneurs. What did it feel like when you got the job, and what were you thinking of?
Very interesting you asked the question, because 6 or 9 months into the role, I remember I was sitting at home alone, and I was reflecting the fact that I was not that tired, even if, like, I worked long hours, and getting into a new role does require a lot of energy. And on top, when it's a new organization, it's a lot of energy. You need to always be there, be on. And we were 100% virtual, so it made the challenge even more challenging. And I asked myself, like, why do I feel like this? It's not related to the lack of work or energy that I deployed over the last few months, but it is the first time, Eva, that I join a sector that I know of. All my other roles were in unknown territories.
Gotcha.
So as much as you have to learn the culture of the organization, you have to learn who are your colleagues, who are your supporters, detractors, what are the ambitions, the goals, the aspirations. In parallel, you need to learn about the sector.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this time around, not that I knew everything, because insurance and banking is similar but a little bit different also. But it was interesting that I came to the conclusion that it felt just a little bit more comfortable because I knew the sector way much more than before. It's about true, Eva, that I came with a very clear mandate. But you have to know that I've shaped the mandate my way.
Right.
No one forced me on bringing growth to BDC. No one hired me with giving me a roadmap.
Right.
But my personality, what I was seeing around me, and remember that I accepted this job when I was in Europe, so I had the different perspective on life. It's a different way of thinking and living. And I came back to Canada, and honestly, I picked on serving my country again after being ambassador, because I believed that out of the pandemic, Canada could become a stronger economy.
Okay.
And I decided to come to BDC because with whom better to have a stronger economy than entrepreneurs?
Absolutely.
So it's, I have no regrets. I miss Europe. I miss the lifestyle. At one point, I'm going to move back to Europe, but not necessarily to work there, but to live there.
Good retirement plan.
Winter is hell for me. Four years without winter confirmed to me that I'm not a winter person.
I see.
Right. But all that to say that it felt comfortable, and I felt at home almost right at the beginning when I joined. And I brought with me the energy and the willingness to change the world and to build and define bigger aspirations and ambitions. And it did not, this was not comfortable for everyone.
I can imagine change is often uncomfortable for many. And as part of that mandate you shaped, and I think, you know, even from the outside, we can see that there might have been a willingness, but it's very much an agenda that you're driving in terms of how, you know, things are going to unfold and this increased support for women entrepreneurs.
Sorry, you've landed on a question for women entrepreneurs, but you'll bring me back there.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so the I think part of that effort led to the Thrive Venture Fund and Lab for Women, which is underway, has taken off. Tell me a little bit about why is it still so important to invest in supporting women entrepreneurs? And I feel like I'm asking a question and
No, mate. It's a very good question.
And for we'll you close specifically.
We'll close the loop on many of the answers that I gave. Like, first of all, when I joined, well, everyone knows what are my positions on equality and gender equity and equality. When I joined BDC, I knew that we would need to do things differently to rebuild an economy that would be stronger, but not only stronger, but that would look different.
Right.
Then when you look at data, 28% of entrepreneurs are women.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the percentage of capital going to women, 2-5%, there's something wrong.
Absolutely.
Back to my comment on having good intentions are not enough to make the needle move into the right direction, I became very much intentional. And I said, well, what do we need to do better, us, BDC, with Women Entrepreneur, but also to influence the market on them also doing differently?
Right.
Because if we're the only one doing differently, that's not going to change will not happen with us alone.
Yeah.
So we had a fund dedicated to women in the VC world, so the venture capital, and the fund was almost all invested. So in my second year, my colleague came and said, well, Isabel, we're already ready to invest again or to do a second fund. And they said, well, we're going to be like highly ambitious. And I said, well, go for it. And then they came back and they said, the first fund was $200 million dedicated to women. We think that we should reserve $300 million. And I said, that's not ambitious enough for me. Why don't we go with $500 million? Mm. And let's make a huge pledge out there for us, but also to influence the market. So that's what I call having good intentions. The good intentions is like, let's make sure that there's more women or better access to capital for women. That is a very good intention. Mm-hmm. But being intentional was the extra step to say, well, what about a platform of $500 million? And I'm very much proud and happy on both what it did internally, but also the influence out there. And then you can just imagine, Eva, like almost everyone was impressed and proud.
Yeah.
But I have to share, sadly so, that some men called and said, well, now enough is enough. And I said, you know what? It's been 1,000 years.
Yeah.
that you've like took
you've
everything.
You've enjoyed the so meal at your table.
We'll do a better sharing of the pie. But in 2023, there's still people with a high degree of confidence on calling or writing and saying, enough is enough, when 2% of the VC total venture capital money goes to women. Only 2%, while they do represent 28% of the overall pool of entrepreneurs.
What else needs to change so that figure goes up? I mean, you're doing a big part yourself, you know, with what BDC is building. But for men who are running, you know, VC investment firms across North America, what needs to change? What's, and you know, I speak to women entrepreneurs on a weekly basis. Many of them are pitching to VCs.
It's hell. And
it's hell.
It's hell because they have in front of them no one that looks like them.
Exactly.
So what we do, like the $500 million pledge is to invest directly, mainly to invest directly into woman-led companies.
Yeah.
But we have also other initiatives where we invest in funds, what we call funds of funds.
Yeah.
Like we do invest in funds that will then themselves decide on which in which company they do invest. And we do direct our money and we do ask and invite them to make sure that they invest a certain percentage into woman-led companies. That's our influence into the sector. We also, it's been 2 years now that we go around our clients, so partners and funds and companies, and we invite them to declare on ESG and DEI components.
Yes.
And it is very uncomfortable for them because it doesn't look good.
No,
no one looks good.
No one looks good right now.
No one can brag that they've arrived somewhere that is enough and that they can call success. But that only influencing, well, only asking those partners to answer a questionnaire on this, it does force them to think about, this is different. And we should do things differently. And then we also invest in training women so that they become LP, GP, and so that there's more women at the table taking decisions in which companies the fund will invest. So you see, we have to influence and work at different levels.
There's many layers.
Deploying capital is big, but that's not going to change the overall picture alone.
This has been a fascinating conversation, and we're getting near the end of our time, but I do want to ask you, and this is how I typically close all these conversations I have. If you had to pick, you've shared so many insights, but if you had to pick three pieces of advice to women entrepreneurs, women in business, what would they be?
First of all, don't be afraid of being afraid.
Okay, I like that.
You will never make that afraid feeling completely disappear, mm-hmm. but deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay to feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid of being afraid. Second, feed your own confidence in yourself. No one will do that for yourself. Without confidence in yourself, you will not be successful, mm-hmm. and no one will be able to do this for you. Right, the reverse. Everyone is capable of making your confidence disappear in a second,
right?
With like a harsh comment mm-hmm. or a look or whatever. So mm-hmm. make sure that day in, day out, your confidence is at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And stop this idea that being confident is being pretentious. There's a huge gap, especially for women, mm-hmm. before you get to being pretentious.
Right, yeah, you have a long ways to go.
Oh, you have a long way to go. And I guess the third piece of advice is take very good care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because at the end of the day, more successful you will become, more you become a target, more mm-hmm. you become a target, more it's difficult to manage like everything that is going on to your life. So you need to be fully and completely mm-hmm. healthy, mm-hmm. mentally and physically.
Right.
Take very good care of yourself.
Mm. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. Great advice. I can't wait to see what BDC does next under your leadership. We'll come in and report on progress.
Anytime,
when this has
ever.
Been going for a few years. Thank you so much. And thank you for being a trailblazer and pushing those doors open for every woman behind you.
Thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to the Brand is Female podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of the Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.